All right, Hokie. Without further ado, although there was no ado in the first place here other than saying hello to each other, it's Ravens week. What does that mean at Steelers headquarters? How is it different? When does it start? When do you start thinking about the game? How are the practices, the meetings, everything else different during Ravens week?
Well, I think there's the heightened sense of urgency, right? I mean, there's a sense of urgency every single game when you're going through the season. But when it's Ravens week, there's a little bit of intensity extra oomph that comes to your preparation. And you don't start thinking about it till after the game because you can't. In the NFL, any team can beat you on any given Sunday, so you can't look ahead to any games. But this week's a big week, and they know it down on the South Side. Because not only that, it's for first place.
Yeah. And there's those numbers out there about what happens to the Steelers and the Ravens after they play each other. Like,
that's the thing. That's the thing that makes me nervous. Not only this game coming up right against the Ravens,
yeah,
but the Steelers and the Ravens both are about 500 following a game, or maybe a little less, after a game that they play against each other. So the Steelers got to turn around, and in 4 days, they got to play against the Browns on the road. And listen, the division game, the Browns aren't the greatest team out there, right? They're really having a bad year. But going to Cleveland on a short week after playing the Ravens, it's not in the Steelers' favor.
Well, my question there is this. I mean, it's the NFL. Every week is physical and violent.
It is.
Is it possible that Ravens-Steelers, why is it more physical and violent than other
because
games?
Because they kind of have the same identity. They want to pound the football, and they want to make you like it. When I played for the Steelers, and it's kind of the same. Maybe it's not as intense as it was back when I was playing, when we had Hines Ward on the team and they, you know, Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs. I mean, it was nasty, and it was a very physical game, and they would line up and they would run power. And I remember playing one time on a Sunday night football game, I believe it was prime time against the Ravens, and I was playing, you know, started that game, played the whole game, and I got double teamed by probably 3/4 of the game, just pounded. And man, I'll tell you, for about 4 days, it hurt to walk. I mean, it was a physical game, and you know what you're getting yourself into when you play against the Ravens. So you better, you know, set your jaw, buckle your chin strap, and be ready to go.
Who was your most disliked Raven?
Oh, listen, the most disliked. I was on defense, so there wasn't really anybody on offense that was a guy like that. I mean, you had the defense, you had the Ray Lewis's, and I didn't get caught up in all that, right? But the guy that we didn't like, you know, Terrell Suggs was that guy to me. I think that, you know. He just was nasty, and he always got after us. And to be a villain in this rivalry, it's not, I want to be a villain. You don't talk about being a villain. I've never seen talk make a play. I've never seen talk create a villain. A villain is when you go out there and you hit somebody. And when you're Ryan Clark and you take out a Willis McGahee and knock him out of the game, mm-hmm. right? Or, you know, or when you come in and you're Hines Ward and you blow someone up and you're looking, you got a target on the very first play of the game looking for Ed Reed. Right, those kind of things, or Chris McAllister. Those are the things that create a villain, not I want to be a villain. And that's why these guys that you're talking about, Terrell Suggs, where he comes in and he's just blowing up people and throwing Ben down and hurting Ben, that's what creates a villain in these games.
Man, I'll tell you, I've covered a lot of Steelers games, and I'd say of my top 10 most memorable, probably 6 of them are Ravens games.
Oh, awesome.
Let's talk about some moments. Let's get people. Let's set the scene.
No, absolutely.
Here before we dive into this game, just tell me your most memorable moment.
Well, listen.
Game.
One of my earliest memories of a Ravens game was, you know, Jerome. Jerome, you know, ran the ball so hard, as you know, and
yes.
He always prided himself on running over people. You know, he never thought in his whole career that he ever got knocked back, even though he probably did. But he would tell, you know, he would say that he's never been knocked back when he's running the football. I remember one time running the ball off offensive right and down, you know, coming getting to the second level, and here comes a screaming Ray Lewis and just lights them up, and they both get up and just talking trash each other. It was one of the, and I was a young Steeler, man, and I was like, holy smokes, like this is big time, right? And that was kind of my introductory to the rivalry, and it's stuff like that. It's just the hard hits, right? You asked me earlier, what makes it? We have the same identity. They want to run the football. We want to run the football. We want to impose our will on people. They want to impose. It's a very similar personality, so it's like two bullies going at it. And
yes.
That's why this rivalry is so intense.
I mean, I didn't write these down, but as we talk, I can name 5 hits off the top of my head that stand out.
Name them.
Bart Scott knocking the air completely out of Ben.
Yep.
Hines prowling Ed Reed and just knocking him senseless on a block.
I love that.
Great.
Hines didn't even care about the play. He just wanted to set a tone for the game.
Jarrett Johnson toward the end. Remember him, the linebacker? Yeah. Laying out Hines and telling BaltimoreRavens.com. It was just an innocent play in a regular season game that was the greatest moment of his career because they finally got Hines. They finally got him.
And they couldn't get him.
They couldn't get him.
It's tough when you're a defender because a defender, you got a responsibility. The offensive guy, you can pray. You can pray on people. It's easy.
Ray Lewis breaking Rashard's shoulder blade in half. You remember that hit?
What about Haloti Ngata? Was he the one that hurt Ben's? Broke Ben's nose.
Yeah, broke Ben's nose.
Can you believe that? How do you break someone's nose?
You swat him in the face with a bear paw.
But you got a face mask. It's not like Ben was wearing an old punter helmet back from the 1970s. I mean,
I know.
How did he get his hand in there and break Ben's nose?
I don't know. I don't know how that happened.
Incredible.
James Harrison, the night he had.
Yeah. Where he
planted Ed Reed like a javelin.
Yeah, that was on the punt return, wasn't it? It was like he was hitting a rag doll.
Oh, my God.
He did that to a lot of people, though, James Harrison.
What about the Polamalu pick? Tell me all about that. It was the greatest play in Heinz Field history in the AFC title game when he takes back the interception on Flacco.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of the one he took back on Flacco. I'm also thinking of the one he took back on Carson Palmer.
Right,
there's a couple of them,
great?
Right? There's a couple of big ones. But I tell you what, the thing that's beautiful about when I was playing against the Ravens those years, not only we played big games in the regular season, we beat them both times in the AFC championship game. That's huge. It's one thing to beat somebody in the regular season. It's another thing to rip their heart out in the playoffs. That's what really, really creates a rivalry.
That game in 08 where Troy made that interception return at the end, he also jumped over the line on a quarterback sneak. Were you on the field for either one of those?
I had the worst memory, but I remember being there, and I can't remember if I was on the field. I don't think I was on the field.
Would Troy just jump over? Like, did you ever have a play where Troy jumped
about Troy.
Over you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So here's the thing about Troy. Troy was a student of the game, and he would study, and he'd prepare. So these weren't like guesses. I mean, he was so prepared for these games, and when he came out, these were educated guesses, right? They weren't just guesses.
Yeah.
So he could tell by the situation of the game. He could tell by the formation and everything what was going to happen, and that's why he took those chances. And when he did that, he was just – I don't know if I've ever seen him jump over the line of scrimmage, and it wasn't a quarterback sneak. It seemed like every time he did it, it was a QB sneak, and he did a great job with it.
They had a bounty on Hines. They had Joe. Were you there? Were you aware that Joey Porter went on their team bus after a game?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
After Ray
yeah.
Lewis? Do you remember that?
I remember that.
Why didn't you go on their bus?
Shoot. I remember one time we're playing the Ravens down there, and I was on the field for this, and Joey Porter jumped and hit a hurt Todd Heap.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, Todd Heap was already hurt.
But he hit him like they thought it was a cheap shot.
Yeah.
And I remember Zeus, big, what's his name?
Orlando Brown.
Orlando Brown, the guy. I still have nightmares of him, like PTSD. But I remember him wanting to kill people, and it was kind of like, dude, we woke the sleeping giant. But Joey didn't care. Like, Joey was the biggest trash talker, and he would just take it. He would go after anybody. But I remember that was a big moment as well. I think it was out there in Baltimore. But I remember being in the field for that game thinking, what is going on here?
I mean, like I said, probably 7 of the 10 most memorable games. There was the Charlie Batch game, the last game he ever played. Remember that one in Baltimore when he beat them?
Yeah, when he beat them. I'm telling you right now, I think it's one of the greatest rivalries of NFL history.
Yes.
Right? One of the greatest. And I think because of how good we both were throughout those years, through the 2000s and early in 2011, 12, we were both really, really good. And we are both winning Super Bowls or playing in Super Bowls, vying for top seeds. And that's what creates this incredible rivalry. It's that and then both having the same kind of personality. Really, they drafted the same kind of guys. They kind of run very similar offenses and defenses. That's what created this whole thing.
And it's extended. It's never going to be what it was when you guys were there because there were so many personalities. But still, in the later years, you had the Antonio Brown immaculate extension.
Yep.
Kenny Pickett had a memorable game against them where he threw to Najee at the end. But that brings us to today and this week. And I have an exercise for you, Hokie.
I love exercise.
Are you willing to engage in this?
Sure. Well, it depends what it is.
I want you to go back in time with Casey Hampton and Aaron Smith and James Farrier and Woodley and Harrison and Clark and Polamalu and
Ike
and Dick LeBeau.
Dickie.
I want you to put yourself in a room and I want you to tell me how you guys would attack this monster that is Lamar Jackson, who now has another monster next to him named Derrick Henry. And let me tell you this, that ESPN wrote this week, these Ravens average 7.1 yards per play. That's only the most in the history of the National Football League. Lamar Jackson's passer rating, if it stays this way, 123.5, the highest in the history of the National Football League. Derrick Henry could become the fifth player ever to average 100 yards a game on 6 yards per carry. This is a beast. How would you guys have attacked this offense?
Well, first of all, I'm going to talk about that in a second. Lamar Jackson, number one in the total yards for a quarterback after 10 games. Number one in the NFL, total yards. Number one in passing TDs. Number one in total TD percentage. Number one in yards per attempt. Number one in passer rating. Number one in QBR. Number one in net yards per attempt. Man, he's having one of the greatest seasons of all time.
Yes.
And that's why Coach Tomlin calls him Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson.
Because you got to show some respect for what he's doing.
Did you mention he's going to rush for 1,000 yards?
Yeah, he's going to rush for 1,000 yards. And then what happened is I think they complement each other, and so you have to pick your poison, right? Am I going to try to come up and shut down Derrick Henry? And then you open yourself up to the throwing game. And Lamar Jackson, years ago, he wasn't this great thrower, right? He has such touch on the ball now. He's really putting a nice little spice on the ball when he throws it. He's able to see the guys are open. He has more weapons now than he had before, too. I mean, I think Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews, last week, the one that took that ball for 60 plus yards for a touchdown against the Bengals. He's got a lot of weapons. Aguilar, I mean, he's got people out there. And so what we would do, I'm telling you right now what we would do. We would make sure that the running game didn't get going. That was our number one. We're going to shut down the run. And then what we would do, so we would line up and make sure that was our number one objective. Because that's how we always played our defense. Shut down the run, get after the quarterback on passing downs and long yardage. And then what we would do is when we rush the passer, and I think you'll see this employed this week, we call it a mush rush. And I've talked about this on the radio here a couple times.
Yeah.
Where what happens is when you're playing against like a Peyton Manning or a Joe Flacco or quarterbacks who can't rush or escape, you can be a little more aggressive in your pass rush, right? So you can take it upfield a little more, dip inside. You can do things to get to the quarterback and be a little more creative in your pass rush. When you're going against a Jaden Daniels like last week, and we can talk about that a little bit, why TJ and Alex didn't have any sacks, or when you're going against a Lamar Jackson, you can't be as aggressive in your pass rush or take some risks to get to the quarterback because he'll make you wrong every time. He's that athletically gifted. And so you've got to keep him in the pocket. You can't let him float back and run around. He's going to do it. You got to limit it. There's no way you can stop him from doing it because he's so athletic. But you've got to keep him in that pocket and make him throw within that pocket and try to collapse it. So as a defensive lineman, my responsibility would not be to try to get to the quarterback. My responsibility, as it was with me and Aaron Smith and Casey Hampton and Brett Kiesel for a lot of the times, is to keep the quarterback in the pocket. So when I was pass rushing, I would mirror him. So I wouldn't try to get to the quarterback. People don't know this. People are like, why didn't those guys get a lot of sacks, the D linemen for the Steelers back in those days? Our responsibility was to keep the quarterback in the pocket, not let him escape, so the Joy Porters, right, and the James Harrisons and Lamar Jackson, the Clarkins can get after the quarterback.
Yeah.
That's why they got all the sacks. And I think that's what they'll do this week, right? But you'll see also T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith. Well, he's out now, but Herbig, and you'll see Preston Smith. It's going to employ this mush rush. They'll try to collapse it around him and make him throw from the pocket where he's not as effective as he is when he's on the run. Or he can hurt you with his legs. And that's why last week with Jaden Daniels, people talk, well, there weren't a lot of sacks because not only, number one, they were chipping, they were scheme blocking T.J. Watt, but also they were just keeping him in the pocket, and make him throw from within there. And it's much more difficult to be aggressive and successful there than it is when they escape.
What would you guys be telling yourselves is a successful game? I mean, obviously you want to win, but you don't want to give up 38 points. Like, what numbers would you have in mind? And I know for a fact from talking to guys on your defenses, when they played the Ravens, they didn't look at it like it's us against the Ravens offense. It's us against their defense, right?
No, and there's no question. It was competitive, right? Because they were always a top five defense, and we were a top five defense in the NFL, and number one against the run many, many times. And so we go out there. We had goals that we had when we played, right? And so we tried to shoot for those no matter who we were playing. I think in this situation right now, when the Steelers are going out there, they have a top-notch defense, right? They have the number top 10, number 8, number 2 in points allowed, points per game defense going against the number one points, scoring offense. And so you're looking at the thing right now saying, I really believe this, Joe, they've got to try to find a way to win. I don't know if you're going to shut down this offense. If they do, I mean, I'll tell you what, huge kudos to the Steelers but it's a matter of just taking the ball away. You got to win the turnover margin, right? You got to win that turnover margin.
Yeah.
Last week they got lucky that they lost the turnover margin and still won that game. But against these Ravens teams, they're much better than the Redskins were last week. So they've got to win the turnover margin. I think right now it's me to slow them down, steal a possession from them, and to be able to win the game.
Stiffen in the red zone, turn touchdowns into field goals, right?
Yeah, it's huge.
They're good
that's
at
huge,
that.
Right? Making them stall drives, right? And that's and then offensively, I think the offense is going to play a huge part in how the defense plays. If the offense cannot move the chains, if they can't have a high percentage on third down, it's gonna hurt this defense, and the Ravens are gonna have a lot of success. So people say, well, what the defense? But they work together, man. They really do work together. And that if the offense goes three and out, if the offense goes out and gets one first down and comes out and doesn't put on a lot of points or have long drives, it's gonna hurt this defense because it's really gonna strain this defense throughout the game because you're gonna give. They're going to move the ball on you, and they're going to have long drives. And so this offense has to help the defense so they can get the rest on the sideline.
Two-time Super Bowl champion Chris Hoke in with me for the whole 11 o'clock hour. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And the fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We open the show talking about this defense. Are they great? Are they good? Are they going to be exposed as something less than good with the good passing games and quarterbacks that they're going to face? I think that's a good question, Hokie. And here's my take on the Washington game, and I want to get yours then, is very simply, I thought that they controlled Daniels on the ground. And I thought it was a good defensive performance, but I thought Washington helped them a lot by dropping balls. And then there was one play that we looked at again, myself and Limits, that could have been a 97-yard touchdown when McCaffrey ran past
Sutton. Well, he ran past Sutton.
Yeah. Right?
There was a lot of talk about Sutton. Sutton got beat twice where Daniels missed him, the receiver. That last one by McCaffrey.
Yeah.
If he would have hit him, that could have gone for six.
Yes.
Right? And there were two. There was another play where Cam, same kind of route. Right. And got beat again, you know, just like a 10-yard, just a post route. And if he would have hit him, he would have gone for big time yardage. So they've got to leverage. You got to stay inside. You can't let a guy beat you inside like that when you're man to man. And that's what happened there. But if you look at this right now, the receivers, like you said, did not help Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels started slow in this game. He came out there, and the Steelers, it was obvious he's a number two rushing quarterback in the NFL. They weren't going to let him get started that way. And they had Patrick Queen that was shadowing him at times. That guys, you know, they weren't going to let him escape the pocket. Keanu Benton did a great job on that last drive of coming off a block and getting him down because he had legs on that one because he had blockers out in front on Patrick Queen and Patrick Wilson. They were both hat on a hat. And the left side, I mean, to the left of the hash, really was open for Jaden Daniels. It would have been a big gain for him. Keanu Benton did a great job of cutting off. And so I think in this game, really, the Steelers did a good job, but the Redskins hurt themselves. Mm. A lot of drops. And it looked like it might have been a pass breakup, but really it was a drop before the DB even got on them.
So what do we make of this defense? Do you think it's going to turn out to be, and they're going to have the opportunity to prove themselves against Burrow, Jackson, Hurts, Mahomes, they're all coming in the second half here. What are we looking at?
I'm looking at a defense that's very opportunistic, a defense that makes the big play when they need to, right? What I love this last game is T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith didn't get a lot of sacks, didn't get a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Here comes Cam Hayward, has two sacks, right? He gets this big pop on the hand, almost gets intercepted. But when to me, a batted pass is just as good as a sack.
Yeah.
So let's say three sacks in this game. You have people that are complimenting each other. He's playing like a young man. And so this defense right now, they give up some big plays. And they give up plays over the middle. Listen, people talk about the cover three, and they give up things in that medium range, in the middle, quite a bit. And so they've got to tighten up on their zone. And when they go man, they've got to play their leverages. Because when you play against a Lamar Jackson or a Patty Mahomes down the road, right? Or when you play against Joe Burrow, if you have a guy streaking across the middle, he's going to hit him and it's going to hurt you. So they've got to tighten up in their zones. They've got to play leverage on man to man. But I think this defense has shown me when they need to make plays,
yes,
they make plays.
I meant to text you with a homework assignment yesterday.
What's that?
And then I forgot, but I'm sure you know it anyway. And we've talked about it before. Is this streak of Minkah not making a turnover play, is now we're talking like years, multiple years, without him falling on a fumble, forcing a fumble, making an interception. And I think the first question I have is what is he being asked to do? And in your opinion, is he playing well?
Everything you hear is that he's playing well. You watch the film, he's doing what he's being asked to do. He's taking away the deep middle of the field. Right, but I remember a guy named Ed Reed who did the same thing and made a lot of plays. I played against Ed Reed. He made plays all the time, and so to me, he was a free safety. Right, he played deep, and maybe he had a little more freedom. Maybe I don't know, but same positions. And so you know, I saw him last week give up on the first drive of the second half. That bad angle to McLaurin, and McLaurin took it all the way down. Joey Porter ran him down and took him down, and they ended up scoring the first time at scoring a touchdown. In the third quarter of the season.
Yeah.
Right. And so listen, the reality is you're considered one of the best safeties in the NFL. You would expect him to make plays. I think this year he has tackles and two pass defense and no interceptions, no forced fumbles, no fumble recoveries. And so to me, I know stats don't matter and Coach Tomlin doesn't care about stats, but at the end of the day, what kind of impact is he having on the game? Cause at some point you can be considered one of the best. You've got to do something that's gonna change games.
So the first part of that, from you watching tape, he's being asked more often than not to be a center fielder type.
He's coming up too. He's coming up and playing a robber sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, for one reason or another, the plays aren't coming. He's a sure tackler. I mean, this is one thing too. He's missed some plays. Those are the ones that stand out to us that play against McLaurin because it happens very rarely. So when it happens, it stands out, right? But he's a sure tackler. I mean, a couple times in this game when he got the receiver down short of the sticks to make him punt. So he is a sure tackler. He
does a
lot of big play. He does a lot of big things. But in terms of how you measure success in the NFL, like think about T.J. Watt going out there doing his job but not having forced fumbles.
Right. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's a great example.
Yeah. I mean, he creates turnovers, impact plays. I mean, T.J. Watt can go out there and get blocked for. Out of 70, say you play 60 snaps in a game and he gets blocked 55 times and he has two tackles for a loss and he has two sacks, he's in the MVP conversation, right? He forces a fumble on one of those sacks, you know, and recovers it. It's a big deal. In this game right here, he had zero tackles. He had zero sacks and he got a couple pressures. But when Cam batted that ball down, TJ Watt intercepts that. It goes right through his hands. He knew he should have caught it. He catches that. Incredible game.
And then he had a huge deflection.
A huge deflection.
And he should have had a safety, you should know, have. For the Steelers.
Do you have to call that, Hokie?
He got held with two hands.
Everybody gets held.
Not like that.
Everybody gets held. Yes, they do. Everybody gets held. Yeah, and the thing is, my thing is, these happen on every single play. Everybody gets held.
That one looked especially egregious.
Tell you this, what I love about TJ Watt, and you don't see it as much on TV as you do when you're at the games. That guy does get held a lot. TJ Watt gets chipped. I mean, he gets crushed at times because you're rushing the tackle, trying to make a move to get on the quarterback, and you have a tight end that comes and just lights you up.
Let me ask you a question about that.
Hold on, okay. But he gets up every time, doesn't complain, doesn't throw his hands up in the air. He just jogs back to the huddle. He's a professional, man. He gets it because he also understands, I'm going to keep coming because I'm going to get my sacks. I'm going to get my big plays.
Right.
And so he doesn't complain. That's what I love. I really, really, really think that's big time. It's underappreciated because a lot of guys would complain. I've seen times get blindsided on a pass rush, chipped, and him go flying down to almost to where the center is. Right? You can't see that all the time. And he gets back up, jogs back to the huddle, keeps coming. And I think that is a true pro.
Let me ask you about that. Because if you're a ball carrier or a receiver, you're tied up, you're engaged already, and someone comes in and lights you up, that's a personal foul. To me, if TJ's engaged already with a pass rusher, it's one thing to double or triple team him, obviously. But somebody comes in from the blind side, and I saw that in this last game and others, and lights
times.
Him up, I think that's a cheap shot.
I don't know. I think a cheap shot is
should be a personal foul.
I think the NFL would only say if they when they're engaged that they went at his knees. Have they undercut him? That's the only time. They don't see that as how else do you stop a TJ Watt? You tell me.
Well, again,
one-on-one,
chipping is one thing, double, triple teaming is another thing. To have a guy engage and then just wait a second and then go in from the side
that's
or the
football.
Blind side.
That's football.
Well, blindside blocks used to be football, too.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's a little different. That's when you're talking about a guy coming from 20 yards away. You know, a lot of these things.
Some of these guys get running starts on TJ.
Listen, it happens, but it happens across the board. It's not only TJ, it happens across the board. It happens to all the great pass rushers.
All right, Hookie. I thought you were going to stand up for TJ there, or at least stand up for pass rushers.
I told you, I think he's a pro. I just love the way he keeps coming. You've never seen him complain. You won't see him talk to the media and complain. That's what a pro is, just keeps coming.